Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair every month or two with Gordon Fricke, and he's here today. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. He has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years, and he knows his stuff. Always nice to have Gordon Fricke on the program. 1-800-348-2551 is the number if you have a question for Gordon. 1-800-348-2551. You can also go to our webpage, wamc.org/voxpop, or to Facebook, WAMC Radio. You'll see a Vox Pop post there. At WAMC Radio, just use the hashtag VoxPop, or email voxpop@wamc.org. But calls are good. Otherwise, Gordon and I do a lot of talking amongst ourselves, and that's fine, but we like to include you as well at home or in the vehicle if your hands free. 1-800-348-2551. Summer's here.
Boy, it comes fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, almost. I mean, technically not here, but it's here.
When is it here technically? Tomorrow?
Is it next
21st?
Week? I don't know.
Coming up very soon.
Absolutely, and summer travel season, gas prices inching up, as always seems to happen.
Gee, why does that happen?
Gee, I don't know. Just in time for all those expensive trips.
Yeah.
So you mentioned before the show started that you're dealing with wheels falling off more often. Why the heck is that happening?
Well, you know, I tow cars. So a lot of my activities are towing cars that are broken down in the ditch, crashed, whatever. And every now and then I will get a car where it's missing its wheel. And you always wonder what happened. You know, why did the wheel fall off? And I always ask the driver, you know, what were you feeling? What transpired prior to this? And usually it's you started feeling some jiggling, you heard some noise, some vibration, and a lot of times the owner isn't really thinking, I should be pulling over because maybe something catastrophic is going to happen.
Yeah.
And then the wheel comes off the car. And what we've got today is a lot of cars have alloy wheels.
Right.
Aluminum wheels, alloy wheels. Instead of the steel wheels with wheel covers or hubcaps that were common 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So if the wheels are off for maintenance, tire work, brake work, whatever, when you reinstall the wheel, you should torque the lug nuts or bolts to a specific value.
Right.
If some debris, some rust or corrosion happens to get between the wheel and the hub or between the brake rotor and the hub, when you torque that wheel, you are at the correct tightness. But if there's some debris or junk in there, after 50, 60 miles, that may turn into a powder, pulverize, and disappear.
And then there's loose.
Now the wheel is loose where it wasn't 3 days before.
Mm-hmm.
So my recommendation is, and we have a stamp that goes on our repair orders, please return or please have the wheels retorqued within 100 miles. Usually within 100 miles, if one is starting to loosen up, you're going to catch it.
Right.
And then we go out with a torque wrench and make sure they're all tight. Every now and then, I'll get a couple of lug nuts that need to go tighter.
Yeah.
But I don't see it being as widespread as it should be to recommend that.
Well, I mean, if you go to the big box stores or wherever else and have your go in on a Saturday and get new tires, they're on sale. We've done it. I don't recall ever getting that recommendation.
Now, a lot of your smaller shops, you know, I see them recommending it. But you're right. A lot of the big chains, they're just not recommending that yet, which they should.
Get you in and get you out. Volume. Yeah. It's all about volume.
Yeah,
you
but
know.
Boy, it's not nice when the wheel falls off.
No, it's not. No, you're right. Absolutely right. So if you're feeling a big shaking, it might be best to pull over.
Well, that's the thing. You know, and the last gentleman I spoke to, and he was a technical guy. He was coming back from a vintage motorcycle meet. So he was a hands-on guy.
Yeah.
And he said, I just never connected this noise to a possible wheel coming off. He said, I just had the tires put on 2 weeks ago.
Ah, very interesting.
Yeah.
The alloy wheels also, why don't they just go with steel wheels?
Well, the alloys, to back up a little bit, they're softer. So when you tighten those lug nuts or bolts up, that wheel is not like steel. It's a softer metal, so that has a lot to do with. I see way more alloys loosening up than steel wheels.
No, I mean, my point is, why don't they stick with steel? Because I know alloy wheels can also do damage to the tire. We've had a tire that's gone, I've replaced it since, that has gone flat, but these alloy wheels have issues where they get, rough?
Corrosion. Yeah, and they leak.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is about aesthetics, the look of the wheel. And they're lighter, so it's something that's called unsprung weight. The lighter you can make the unsprung weight, the better the car performs and handles and rides. So it's all about looks and performance, basically.
Can you still, if you want aftermarket steel wheels, get them?
They're only going to be really basic, plain, ugly wheels, basically designed for snow tire use. They're going to look horrible.
Yeah, well, when you're driving a lousy minivan, looks really don't matter too much. Let's go to Doug in Florida, Mass. You're up, Doug.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2012 Jeep Liberty with about 32,000 miles on it. And I noticed this when I took my camper out. When I put the car in reverse, basically at low RPM, if I just feather the gas, I get this pretty pronounced shaking in the driveline. I didn't know. I was thinking maybe a motor mount, or am I concerned with something transmission? Any ideas?
Yeah, Doug, is it more of a shudder when you start to get the vehicle rolling?
Yes.
Yeah, so basically zero speed to just creeping and getting going?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, pretty violent shudder.
Is it?
Pretty
okay.
Noticeable.
How about in any forward speeds? Nothing? If you're going in drive?
No. It's fine. It's fine moving forward. It just seems to be in reverse.
Yeah, I've experienced that in a variety of Jeep Liberties, and it didn't matter if I was in drive or reverse. And it's just a function of the transmission clutches engaging. But being a 12 and having it only occur in reverse, there is the possibility that there's something in the transmission that's not engaging correctly. So let's see, a 2012, you're probably out of warranty, or does that have a drivetrain warranty?
It's got a 560 drivetrain.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think I would, can you demonstrate that to the dealer, or do you have to be hooked up to a trailer or something?
No, I can demonstrate. I just noticed it with the trailer because I was, trying to back up very slowly.
And, yeah.
Then I thought maybe it had to do with the weight, and then I took the trailer off and it still, did the same thing.
Yeah. I think I'd bring that to your dealer's attention at the very least to have it down on record that you've got a concern there, and there might be a fix or a service bulletin on that very subject that's correctable. So I wouldn't wait too terribly long. So you're still well within the warranty.
Okay.
Right.
Doug, thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Let's go to Richard in Whitestone. Richard, are you in Whitestone, New York?
Whitestown. Whitesboro.
Oh, Whitesboro. I thought you were down by the Whitestone Bridge. That would have been a heck of a good catch over the radio. Anyway, you're on the air.
Okay. I have a question about the valve stem inside of the wheel sensor. It's got a wheel sensor. And the valve that's in the stem is stuck. And I was just wondering if there's some way to go. Should I rotate the tire around and pour some de-ruster in there or something and let it sit? Or is there a trick on getting it out without ruining the whole stem and the sensor?
That's become a common occurrence with the tire pressure sensors that have the aluminum valve stems. And it's all about corrosion. It's salt water getting in there. Is it, Richard, that you can't get the valve core out to let the air out of the tire? Is that what you're trying to remove?
Right.
Yeah.
You usually change the core when you put new tires on.
Yeah, well, at the very least, that's how you let the air out of it. They make, there's a couple things you can do. They make a little tool that screws over the outside of the valve stem, and it pushes that valve down and lets the air out of the tire in the event that you can't get the core removed. And that's okay as long as the corrosion has not gotten into what seals that valve stem up so you don't have a leak.
Yeah, leak, tends to leak.
Okay, yeah. Really, your only option is to replace it or have it replaced.
The whole sensor and
well,
everything.
Some offer the stem separate from the sensor. There are two pieces, and that's kind of nice because if the sensor is good and it's working, you don't have to buy the whole thing. You have to just get the stem.
Yeah.
On your car, I wouldn't know without looking it up to see if it's a two-piece or a one-piece, but you're going to be forced to replace that stem or the sensor because you're going to have flat tires.
Okay.
Or tire.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke is our guest today, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment.
Support comes from Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. Sunflower Natural Foods, Woodstock and Rhinebeck, bug spray and sun care for the family and pets, cold drinks, barbecue, ice cream and organic watermelon, salads and more from the to-go cooler. SunflowerNatural.com. Fulton County Tourism in the Southern Adirondack Park, featuring Path Through History on weekends, historical attractions, museums, dining, and lodging. 44 Lakes, 44 Choices. 44lakes.com. Maybe Farm Historic Site, Rotterdam Junction, New York, presenting Howlin' at the Moon Concert Series, live bluegrass and folk music in a historic Dutch barn, Thursday, July 2nd, featuring Running the River. SchenectadyHistorical.org. Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home. ValleyHomeImprovement.com. And Manny's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete. Available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores. Manny'sOliveOil.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. We talk automotive maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. The time is 21 minutes after 2 o'clock. Plenty of time for you to get in online here at 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Barbara in Albany. Barbara, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a two-part question, and here we go.
Okay.
What's the difference between four-wheel drive and all-wheel drive?
Love it.
And the reason I'm asking is because I have a Subaru, and it's a station wagon. I love it. It allows me to drive around. I can park anywhere I want to when it's snowing, and it's really great. But what I'm looking for is something that's a little bit bigger, bigger even than the Forester. I want three rows of seating. But it seems like the vehicles that have three rows of seating have four-wheel drive, which, from what I understand, is makes the car a lot heavier than something with all-wheel drive because it needs two kinds of transmission systems.
Huh.
So if you could clarify that for me and then maybe recommend a three-rows seating SUV, that would be very helpful.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. We get that quite a bit. And basically, all-wheel drive is a system that requires the driver to take no action. It's always available. It's always working. If you run into slippery conditions, the wheels are kind of getting powered as necessary. So you don't have to throw a lever, push a button, that type thing. And usually the main transmission contains the unit that turns the power and brings it to the rear wheels and powers the front wheels. Four-wheel drive goes back to bigger, heavier truck and sport utilities where they're traditionally a rear-wheel drive vehicle. The front wheels are not driven until they're asked to or commanded to by you pushing a button or operating a lever. And they have a separate transmission called a transfer case. And it is bigger and it is heavier. So that's basically the difference. And there are a lot of vehicles with third row seating now that are what you'd consider to be an all-wheel drive vehicle. In fact, there's lots of them. Volvo XC60s and XC90s, The RAV4s got bigger with third row seating, Toyota RAV4s, 4Runners. Most of those are traditionally a all-wheel drive vehicle, and they start out primarily as front-wheel drive. So if that answers your question.
What does it mean they start out at four-wheel drive?
A lot of, for example, a Volvo, an XC90. It is primarily a front-wheel drive vehicle. And then as soon as there's the slightest amount of need for all-wheel drive, it comes on automatically.
Is there an option to turn that off and just go two-wheel drive all the time?
No, it's just always there. It's basically, a lot of Honda Pilots are primarily front drive, and then the rear is engaged automatically when necessary.
Yeah.
So that means that it still has the transfer case, so it's still that much heavier. It's not just one system like in my Subaru.
Now, the traditional old-fashioned transfer case is a big unit that hung off the back of the transmission, and that's really, you only see that on pickup trucks and big, big sport utilities now. It's incorporated in the transmission on most of the vehicles that we're talking about.
Okay.
Okay.
Did you have a second part, Barbara, or was that it?
No, those are both parts rolled into one. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Barbara. Let's go over to Liz in Albany. Liz, you're on.
I have a 2000 Lexus 300SC, and this winter I was trying to put gas in the gas tank, and I guess a canister froze, so I couldn't put the gas in. So I took the car into Lexus, and Lexus said, they don't make the part anymore. And I said, well, what am I supposed to do? They said, you know, we don't know. And I checked around, and nobody made the parts. Fortunately, it dried out, and after about two or three days, I could put gas in the car. But what do you do when something like that happens? I only have, by the way, 68,000 miles on this car.
Yeah, you mean they didn't bring you into the showroom?
No, they did bring me into the showroom. You're right.
Yeah. So the thought was that the charcoal canister had frozen. Is that what they?
Yes, and it was filled with water. So I actually brought it someplace else, and they drained it and dried it. And so I'm not having a problem with my car now. But I'm thinking, what happens? I mean, they make 3D printers these days. Does anybody make parts?
Yeah, you know, some of these emission parts are available aftermarket now. If that Lexus takes a very common canister, which it could, because Toyota is the main company that produces Lexus, so that canister is probably going to fit a lot of other cars. So you could have a repair shop check for you and see if they're available in the aftermarket. Because I'm seeing.
Oh, I did that.
You did.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh no, I went to Firestone and then to a local guy. I went several places.
And none existed for that car?
No, nobody could get it, they said.
Wow.
So I thought, luckily enough, it dried out.
Yeah. Well,
but now I'm thinking, what happens next winter or whatever?
Yeah. Well, you know, ordinarily they don't get that wet and moist and freeze, but it's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
The possibility of getting a used one exists.
Like eBay or one of those things?
eBay, or just have your normal, if you visit a repair shop, an independent repair shop, they can, usually they have some relationships with different salvage yards for used stuff.
Okay.
And you could maybe possibly get a nice used one out of a low mileage car.
Mm.
Although, you know, yours being a 2000, it's getting a little old as far as, you know, maybe they're not out there in big numbers in salvage yards. But that's probably your last option to try to get a used one.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Maybe it is time to hit the showroom, huh?
I guess so.
All right, Liz, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rob in Kingston. Rob, you're on with Gordon Friggy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Really appreciate it.
You bet.
Didn't know about your shop. I'm originally from Central Cambridge, so.
Oh, wow.
But now I'm down in Kingston. I have a 95 Buick Century that I had the brakes changed or fixed a few weeks ago. And now the right front tire sounds like there's a rock in the hubcap all of the time, except when you turn to the right.
Now, is this at slow speeds, you know, in town where you can hear it, or is this going faster?
Well, actually, I notice it when I first start the car and, you know, move out to the end of my street, which is not even 500 feet. So it is slow. And in the nice weather, I have the windows down, so I don't really hear it because of all the wind and so forth.
Yeah.
So it may be going at much larger, faster speeds. I'm just not sure. But never when I turn to the right.
It's entirely possible that the brake shield behind the brake disc is slightly too close to the rotor. And when you turn the vehicle, the weight of the vehicle and the forces exerted on the wheels flex everything a little bit. And it's very possible that maybe one of those brake shields is too close to the rotor. And sometimes that's really easy to find and see if you raise the car up or take the wheel off. Or sometimes you can just go through the wheel with a long screwdriver and just kind of take that shield and just push it a little bit. Make sure it's nicely out of the way of the brake disc.
Okay.
That's entirely possible. It could be some hardware is touching. You know, there's some clips and stuff that keep the brake pads where they're supposed to be. One of them might be way too close or not quite in the right position. But
okay.
I would check all this. And how long ago did you have the brake work done?
Well, I'm saying 3 weeks, but it's probably a little bit over a month now.
Yeah.
At a local garage. So yeah. I certainly would bring it back to them. It's just awfully odd that when I, you know, go to the right all of the time, it never happens.
I'd probably adjust that for you if you take it
back,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. It probably is something along those lines that we were talking about.
Well, thanks very much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Rob. We appreciate the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. I'm Ray Graff. Over to Ed in Cornwall. Ed.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Enjoying the show.
Thanks.
My question is, I have a 99 Mercury Sable with a noisy front wheel bearing. And I haven't had an opportunity or the money to get into the shop and replace it. What's worst case scenario?
Well, when you say noisy, is it roaring as soon as you start moving, or does it just make noise when you're bearing through turns? What kind of noise do you have there, Ed?
Okay, it's at speed.
Yeah. It's not
loud at low speed.
Yep. Does the sound change when you bear through turns, you know, when you shift the weight on the car a little bit?
You know, I haven't really noticed.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's easy to confuse tire noise with wheel bearing noise. If the tire tread is worn poorly or in a choppy manner, tires will make a ton of noise.
Or underinflated or overinflated,
this
right?
This is definitely the bearing.
Okay. If it's definitely the bearing, I would not advise driving it much longer because, again, as we spoke earlier, I do towing, and I've towed also a handful of cars in over the years that had wheel bearing failures. And I remember one poor guy distinctly. I think he was traveling down from New Hampshire, and the wheel fell apart, and it didn't leave the car, but it was a mess. It locked up on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just awful. And I got the car up on the truck, and I said, it looks like your wheel bearing, you know, is completely gone. He said, I've been hearing that noise now for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
He said, I took it in somewhere, and the shop said, oh, you could go a year like that. Don't worry about it. It's, you know, to go on your trip and get it fixed when you get back. So
yeah.
I would not, if it's that loud, you're on borrowed time. Mm. I wouldn't risk it.
Okay.
Because it can go bad fast.
And a failure will do what?
Well, if you're lucky, it's just going to make so much noise, and it's going to...
No, I mean, when it finally goes, what happens?
Well, that's what I'm leading up to. It'll get really noisy. It'll start to vibrate and shake and make crunching, popping sounds. But the worst-case scenario is that the wheel can violently stop turning, Now you got a locked up. Now you got a locked up wheel.
I had that.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks, Ed. We appreciate the call. 30 plus years ago, driving in Vermont in my 65 Le Mans, not knowing much about anything. Pop, 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 pop. C's.
Front wheel bearing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gone. Had to have it towed out. And I forget how much it cost to fix that one, but it was, must have been early 80s. So the car was 16, 17 years old by that point.
Yeah, so that bearing had a lot of turns on it by then.
Yes, it did. Let's go over to Andy in Galway. Andy.
I have a Honda Civic, and I'm told that the airbags have been recalled. It's a 2004 Honda Civic. How urgent is that to get that replaced?
Did you receive a recall notice? Is your car in that recall roster?
I guess what I have to do is call the Honda people and find out, but I bought this car third hand. So maybe they've just not gotten to my address.
Well, here's what I would do, because that Takata airbag recall is a really super hot subject right now, because so many vehicles have that brand of airbag in them, and they've had lots of trouble with them, and the recall is expanding. And what I would do is call any Honda dealer, or you can call Honda corporate. With your VIN number handy, they'll run it and tell you if your car is involved. I don't know if cars of that vintage are or not.
Well, they say 2004. So.
Okay, call Honda to be sure. And if you're not in that range, you're fine. Don't worry about it. If you are, they're going to advise you on what the procedure is going to be. And unfortunately, it could be a long waiting period, because I looked into a Mazda with that recall issue, and they can't get the parts fast enough.
Yeah.
And they're delivering the parts to the southern states with the highest humidity, because that's where the most problems are occurring.
Yeah.
Right.
So check into it. And if you're lucky, yours is not even in that recall.
All right, Andy, thanks
a
lot.
I'm hoping for luck. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Okay, so how would you know? I mean, if you buy your car new, will the dealer get in touch with you?
Yeah. When you buy your car new, your name is attached to that VIN number, and corporate has that information.
Do they have an obligation to do it?
Absolutely. Yes. They do have to make you aware of it within normal means of them mailing something.
So surface mail usually would be the way.
It always comes in the mail.
Okay. Because we have some in that range, and it's a Chrysler, so I have no idea if it's part of it or not.
I don't know if – I don't think they are, but anytime you get a used vehicle, in the owner's manual, there's going to be a change of address card. You should always fill that out and get on the list for recalls or safety information.
Well, we bought this one new, and frankly, it would surprise me if it was part of the recall, because everything else is wrong with it. But I'm sure that is working just fine.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Let's go to Matt in New Paltz. Matt, you're on.
Hi. I have a 1990 Dodge Ram 350. It was a big old church van, and I've been having some problems with stalling and sputtering and backfiring for a while.
Yeah.
Does it? Okay, go ahead. You got more to the story?
Well, yeah. I've been trying to figure out. Actually, I took it to a couple shops recently because I had to get it inspected and then get an oil change, and I asked them to look at it, and someone just replaced the fuel filter. And then said, you know, it's nothing. Somebody else said it might be a vacuum leak, and so I checked around for a vacuum leak. And then somebody just recommended that I check my plugs again and do a compression test, which I actually just did today. And all the plugs look good, and the compression is consistent at like about 100 psi or something in all 8 cylinders. And so I'm trying to figure out what else could be causing it. Kind of like as you start up the car and drive off, it's real jerky acceleration for a little while, and then there's the occasional like pop, and I can feel that in the accelerator pedal. But when it gets up to like 55 miles an hour, it drives nice and smooth.
Hmm.
So when it runs okay, you've got normal power, the power that it normally has.
Yeah, it seems to be fine. Like once it goes through, you know, first, second gear, and it's, you know, spinning well and getting up to speed, you know, I can drive like on the highway and, you know, up and down hills.
Yeah.
No problem.
Well, you know, unfortunately there are things that can be tested. Being a 1990, you can't just plug into that and get all kinds of information from the computer. It does have a diagnostic link, but it's a little bit primitive. So it requires some testing and some intuition as to what the problem could be. Ignition coils are touchy items. That vehicle,
I replaced the rotor, the distributor cap, and the coil, maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah. How about the wires? Are they old? Are they original? The spark plug wires?
No, they're, you know, relatively recent. Like,
yeah.
I can still, you know, they're nice silicone, plug wires.
Yeah. It's going to require some equipment, fuel pressure testing, things like that.
Hey, Matt, we got to take a break. You want to hang in there for a minute,
sure.
or are you done?
I can hang in for a second.
All right, hang in there. Let's take a break, Zach. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Still time to get your call in here on our automotive program. 1-800-348-2551.
Comes from H. House & Son True Value, Woodstock, New York. Since 1932, a local hardware store for summer projects and grills and party supplies for outdoor fun. True Value. Behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com. Saratoga Saddlery, Saratoga Springs, New York. An equestrian lifestyle boutique featuring cowboy boots by Lucchese and Ariat for women, men, and kids. On Facebook and SaratogaSaddlery.com. The Ashokan Center, a classroom in the wild where nature inspires conferences, festivals, family celebrations, and outdoor education for schools. AshokanCenter.org. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. Taft Farms, Great Barrington. 200-acre family farm harvesting asparagus, rhubarb, and seasonal vegetables and offering homegrown flowers, bedding plants, and heirloom vegetable plants for your home garden. Open 7 days, taftfarms.com. And Planned Parenthood Mid-Hudson Valley, providing sexual and reproductive health and education services in Dutchess, Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties for over 80 years. PPMHV.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and let's go back to Matt in New Paltz and finish up this stalling and sputtering of your 1990 Dodge 350. Go ahead, Matt.
Sure. So I find, a lot of the parts are relatively cheap for cars. Is there anything else that you can think of that's worth, you know, looking at or testing, say, like any of the ignition parts or, you know, throttle issues? Or
aside from taking it in where a shop has some equipment, you know, you've done most of what you can do. The spark plugs, Ray and I talked about that here during the break. Are they pretty new? Did you put them in yourself recently?
Yeah. I replaced them maybe a year or two ago, but I don't drive it many miles. And I just took them out right now, and they all look nice and, you know, clean. They're not fouled or scored or anything.
See, it's important to look at every spark plug in the cylinder it comes out of carefully, because plugs can tell the story of maybe one cylinder not running correctly. And again, on that vehicle, you can't just plug a scanner in there and do a lot of diagnostics that way. So one thing I always recommend is a good, healthy, strong dose of fuel injection cleaner. And Tecron is the formula that I always talk about, because it's old, been around, and very, very powerful. If you've got any issues with carbon on the valves, carbon on the pistons, or a plugging fuel injector or injectors, a heavy dose of that, one or two tankfuls in a row, could give you some great improvement.
And you'll feel the difference.
Yeah, sometimes within the first half tank.
Yep.
So that'd be where I would go next.
All right.
Thanks, Matt. We appreciate the call. Let's go over to Ian in Mount Vision, New York. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mount Vision.
All right, you're on, man.
I have a 1999 Honda CR-V, and some pretty interesting problems going on with it. I was on my way back to college, actually, 2 weeks after replacing all my spark plugs, and it died on the side of the highway. And turns out it was a problem with the distributor, the whole thing, not just the cap. So I replaced it, and it ran fine for 2 miles and then died again. And I'm thinking it might be the distributor again, but what would be killing both of my distributors?
What did you replace it with, a new or remanufactured distributor, or did you get a used one?
Oh, yeah. No, I got a used one.
Okay.
A pretty used one.
Yeah. Well, inside that distributor is all your electronics on that vintage car. There's a unit in there that senses the revolutions. I even think the ignition coil might be packed in there. Is the ignition coil under there? It's a pretty large distributor cap with all the stuff in there.
Yep.
That's, in effect, your whole ignition system. So if any one of those components in there fails, it gives you the same result. Honda had a lot of trouble with their what they called igniters, and I'm not sure if that was an issue in 99 or not, but you could you still have that old distributor?
I have both of them, yeah, but yeah. I took apart the old one to see what the problem was.
Well, there's a unit in there that I believe is still an igniter, and again, without test equipment, I can only give you so many suggestions, but you could either get another distributor, another used one, just plug it in there and try it, and if you're up and running, great, you got a bad used part, and that used part could have had 200,000 miles on it.
Right.
There's a lot of testing, but it's too much to describe over the... over the airwaves, you know?
Yeah. So you think it's possible that I just happened to get a bad distributor right after the last one broke, and that's just a problem with Honda?
Well, it's possible. Mm-hmm. The other thing is you need to make sure that, you know, everything is still correct with the engine. In other words, the cam belt didn't break, the camshaft is still turning, which means
Could it be the crankshaft position sensor?
Possible, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Does the engine crank strangely now, or does it sound normal when you go to start it?
Well, see, that's the thing. I charge the battery, I jump it, and it cranks, totally fine, completely fine, but there's no spark in any four of the plugs, so...
Yeah. What you should do real quick is take the distributor cap off, have somebody crank the engine, make sure that rotor's still turning.
Okay.
And that'll tell you that your cam belt's still on.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay, yeah, I replaced the distributor cap, but I didn't even think to see if the rotor was turning.
Just have somebody crank it and watch it, just to be sure.
Okay, so that's the first thing, and then after that, maybe a new distributor.
I would try that, because if that's what you if you're going to attempt it yourself, give it that another shot.
Okay.
All right, hey, thanks so much.
Yep, Ian, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop. It is a call-in show. Gordon Fricke only here once every month or two. This is your chance. Nicole in Albany. Nicole, you're on.
Hi. I have a 2011 Nissan Rogue with 51,000 miles on it. I got it at 4,000 miles. And when I'm idling or accelerating, I'm hearing like a metal rattling under my car, and I almost hear it go from front to back. And I've had it looked at a dealership, and then at an auto shop, and then a family friend who's a mechanic. Nobody can find anything wrong with my car. I'm kind of starting to drive me insane.
Sure. Yeah, that's a common thing. I'm just going to take 1 second and just give a shout out to my daughter.
Oh, we almost forgot.
Yeah, Hannah's getting ready to go to camp, so she and her friends are packing up trunks and cars and things like that.
Nice.
So I wanted to tell her. She asked me to say hello.
Hello, Hannah. And, you know, you could have come. You could have come to the station.
And if Emma's out there, hello, Emma.
All right. We've dispensed with that.
We're all good.
Now back to Nicole in Albany. Sorry about that, Nicole.
Now, Nicole,
that's okay.
I forgot everything you just said, Nicole. No, I'm just kidding.
Rattling noises.
Yeah, yeah, great.
No.
Yeah.
What we run into a lot is exhaust shields, metal shields that surround the exhaust system. And they're also connected to the catalytic converter to keep the heat from getting into the rest of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very common to get rattles, tinny rattling sounds. And your key here was when you're idling and not moving. Because if the car's in motion, there's a whole other group of things that can start making noises. But if the engine's running and you're sitting still, my guess is it's an exhaust-related noise. And it's probably having to do with the shields.
That's not an expensive fix,
is
it?
Not really. Usually it's just a matter of tweaking them, tightening them, clamping them, maybe some new fasteners. But yeah, in those systems require a lot of attention. We're doing it probably every week on some kind of car or other.
But is that something that you could, if you can deal with the noise, you can drive with it a while?
For the most part, it's not detrimental, no.
Okay.
Okay. And in terms of when I idle, I hear it, but I do hear a sound when I'm accelerating. It's a different rattle, but would that be a part of what's going on when it's idling?
It still can be the same source, but the noise changes because now the RPMs of the engine have increased. The vibrations are all different. The car's now in motion. I would shoot for that before anything else.
But it could be something else, right?
It's entirely possible.
Okay.
Could it have anything to do with, I've never had a vehicle with a CVT transmission. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
I know that there was some recalls in 2010, nothing with 2011. Would that be too far removed from where I'm hearing the noise?
What you're describing doesn't strike me as being that type of a sound. If it's a kind of a most of your transmission noises are going to be more muffled and because the transmission's, you know, in a case and there's fluid in there. You're hearing something kind of almost on the outside, like a tinny rattling sound.
Yeah, and I notice it like in the morning if I'm in a drive-through.
Yeah.
It almost echoes off of the wall of the drive-through. Mm.
I would aim toward, I'd have somebody shoot towards those shields first.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, Nicole, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. All right, this one came in via email. I've got to get my glasses on here. Give me about a moment here.
You want to borrow my cheaters?
No, I got my. All right, mine. Here we go, my progressive lenses. Now everything looks fuzzy. All right, this is from Brian. Great show. See, you start with the compliment, you get on, you get your email read.
These guys always do that when we get these via email, don't they?
Yep. Brian has a 2005 Toyota Matrix. Every now and then, the airbag malfunction light will come on. Seems to occur more often in colder weather. Should I address this issue or just ignore it? Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, yeah, good question, because we get a lot of vehicles with airbag warnings on, and I think a lot of people don't realize that if the airbag light is on, the warning light is on all the time, there is a high likelihood that your airbags won't work in the event of a crash.
Yeah.
Not a guarantee. They may still function, but there's a chance that they won't. So it should be looked into. Now, if his is an intermittent situation, which is what he's writing there, if the system gets scanned, there probably will be a history code in there as to what turned the light on.
Yeah.
Ideally, if the light's on and you can scan it, then you're getting the live data of what's not working. So he should have it checked out.
Okay.
Because it is a safety component.
I know that in our minivan, when it's very wet out, the light will go on occasionally for the passenger side airbag. Then it goes off.
Yeah, and when that occurs, it's entirely possible that there's a connection somewhere, more than likely outside at one of the impact sensors, because they're outside of the cabin.
Yeah.
And if there's a marginal connection that maybe the weather seal's not perfect,
yeah,
the water gets in there, and the voltages are so minute that the water kind of gives it a miniature short circuit temporarily.
Yep. Yeah, as long as it doesn't deploy.
Yeah, generally they won't, but it's worth looking into.
All right, let's go over to Jeff in Kingston. Jeff.
All right.
Hi.
Just to respond to the previous caller's question, the airbag in my car will indicate that it's off if there's a small weight in the passenger side, and that's in case that you have a baby there, it shuts the airbag off automatically.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, a lot of cars, and you didn't see that on older vehicles, but there is a sensor in the passenger seat, and you'll notice that when you have nobody in the car but yourself, or there's nobody in the passenger seat, there will be a yellow light that says passenger airbag off.
Yeah.
And that's normal, but I think the email or the previous
caller,
I think he said his malfunction light was on at times
in cold weather
and then not on at others.
Right.
Yeah.
What's your question, Jeff?
My question is, my problem is my tire pressure indicator that indicates the pressure if it's low on my tires is on. It came on coincidentally when I removed a tire one day to check the brake pads on my car. And I put it back on, and I thought it would reset eventually, and it didn't. And then I checked, I disconnected the battery, tried to reset it that way, and that didn't work. And so I went to one of my local, where I get my tires, twice, and they checked the sending unit from each one of the wheels, and they were fine. So I've been riding with the thing on. In the wintertime, I changed to snow tires, so it really didn't matter because they don't have sensors anyway in the wheels that I used. But it's I'd like to try to figure out how to shut this light off and
okay.
have it back.
Yeah. Jeff, when you start the car up, does the light first flash and then go on solid, or is it just a solid light all the time?
No, it flashes.
Yeah. The flash usually indicates there's trouble in the system rather than sensors not responding.
Uh-huh.
So it needs to get scanned. And the other thing I usually recommend, and I don't know about your car, but some spare tires, full-size spares, have a sensor in them, and you need to make sure the spare's up to the right pressure.
Aha! That's an interesting one. Jeff, we got to move it along, but thank you very much. Let's go over to Stephanie in Kingston. Stephanie, you're on.
Hi. I have an 87 Toyota Camry, and she has a leaky head gasket, so I'm keeping an eye on the oil. But I noticed lately that she's been running pretty rough, especially when I just start her up. It takes a second to really get her fully started. She stutters a little bit. And then today, when I was pulling out of a parking space, it actually stalled, and it's an automatic, so I didn't think that was a good thing.
Yeah. How many miles are on the car, roughly?
136,000.
Yeah. So the head gasket's leaking oil externally. Is that what the issue is?
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's all the head gasket's doing wrong, that generally won't affect anything of how it runs. If mm-hmm. the head gasket's leaking coolant or other things internally, then you got bigger problems.
Oh, yeah.
So the thing to be concerned with is steam out of the exhaust, when it's running rough, if you're going through coolant, and, or if it's not related to the head gasket at all, the usual things, spark plugs, condition of, you know, the air filter, and if it has a fuel filter, which that car does, or a replaceable one, I should say, you know, general tune-up and maintenance items, fuel deposits, the Tekron in the tank's always
a
good thing to use. But it could, to answer that stalling and running rough, could be a lot of things. Spark plugs, you know, all that tune-up stuff is always
right.
in question.
Have you ever had a tune-up on that thing, Stephanie?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Okay, so you have new plugs, pretty new?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I think somebody's got to poke around in there and check. Maybe you got a vacuum leak. Could be anything, really.
Yeah
it could be a lot of
okay.
possibilities.
Well, it could be expensive, too.
Right.
Sorry about that. Stephanie, thanks a lot for the call. Hey, here's one that quickly came in via email. This is from Phil. I have a 2010 Chevy HHR. It has ABS. One front wheel hub needs to be replaced. Should I replace both?
Yeah, good question. Does it say how many miles are on that, Ray?
It does not.
No, okay. That's a question I get asked a lot, and the answer is usually not really or not necessarily, particularly if it doesn't have a ton of miles on it.
Yeah.
Because that hub assembly contains the wheel bearing and the ABS sensor.
Yeah.
And they don't wear out exactly the same time. So to answer his question, generally you do those one at a time.
Okay.
Unless it's got a ton of miles and or they're noisy or you're seeing symptoms from both. Then, of course, you have to do them both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that's fairly cut and dry. Hey, Gordon, thanks for being here today.
Oh, a lot of fun.
It was a good time. And thanks to everybody who called in. I'm sorry if you didn't make it through. Really, it's tough at the end of the show to get in. So call early next time, and Gordon will be back. Support comes from the Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Watervliet Avenue, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals, honestweight.coop. The Arkell Museum at Canajo Harry, presenting Surrounding Sampling Birchfield's Wallpaper, opening June 26, 2015, with original designs and watercolors by Charles Birchfield, arkellmuseum.org. North Shire Bookstore, Saratoga Springs, New York, Paul Dwaron presents The Precipice Thursday, June 25th at 6 p.m. Northshire.com. And SPAC presenting the 38th annual Fryhofer Saratoga Jazz Festival featuring Erica, Badu, Maze featuring Frankie Beverly, Sheila E., Al Di Meola, Electric Band, Cassandra Wilson, and more, June 27th and 28th, SPAC.org for tickets. Thanks again for listening and for calling, and thanks to Gordon Fricke. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. The phones were answered by Deb Malik. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday, a special treat in store as always. Stay tuned now for a news update.